This episode of Football 301, Matt Harmon joins me for some more coaching carousel catch-up. We look at some of the new hires, Jacksonville, as the ban is lifted for the Jaguars, the Cowboys and Schottenheimer, the Jets hiring Aaron Glenn, the Raiders getting nice and competitive with Pete Carroll. We look at all those hires, look at some assistant coaching news and hires and rumors, some Chip Kelly talk at the end of the show. Super fun with Matt. See you guys in a sec. Hello and welcome back to Football 301. I'm your host, Nate Tice. We are in the glow of that conference championship weekend. We get a little deep breath here this week. And so we think there's no games this weekend, but there's still stuff to talk about because that's the coaching carousel, which never, ever stops. Just like last week when we went over the new coaching hires, some rumors, our thoughts on those. We today are going to do the exact same thing. We had some more coaching hires, the Jaguars, the Jets, the Raiders, the Cowboys, and we had some more assistant coaching hires as well. To help me do that, just like last week, to break each of these down, the next steps for these teams, what we think about them, my guy, Mr. Matt Harmon. How you doing today, Matt? Just saw you a couple days ago, so this is nice. We're just bouncing right back. Let's do this. Doubleheader.
Exactly. I'm very excited. And man, what an honor to be talking to you today of all days, the day, Nate Tice, that Drake May has been added to the Pro Bowl roster. So shout out to you. You did it. You did it. Your QB1, what did you phrase it as? QB1A, your yes. Top prospect from last QB1. Year's class is, just QB1. We'll leave it at that. Screw the A. I don't know if you guys know this. A is the first letter of the alphabet. So yes. QB1 for Nate Tice is a Pro Bowler. Take a bow.
That's it. Thank you. Sudden death. That's it. The careers end right now. That's it. We were right on the takes. Nothing else happens. Nothing else matters the rest of your life. It might be a Vince Young situation. You know, you make the Pro Bowl your first year and then maybe it tapers off. But no, that's really funny. You told me you had a little piece of news to drop. And I was very curious where you're going to go with that. I thought I had something to do with the Jaguars ban that we're finally lifting, Matt Harmon. Something we did, I want to say, out of fit of rage. It was that in early October that we've had the Jags ban, maybe mid-October.
I don't even know if you can say we. I think this was mostly a you thing. So, I rage quit the Jags. But I will say that I have gotten caught up in this because I have had people reach out to me independently of you and say, will Nate be lifting the Jags ban? So we're very excited for this.
I think it got when people realized it was real was when we did a rookie quarterback check-in, speaking of rookie quarterbacks, and it was on Caleb Williams, and I didn't talk about Caleb Williams because they were playing the Jags that week, and everyone's like, oh, you're serious about this? It's like, yeah, they're not getting touched. Every collateral damage for everybody else. But no, the Jaguars, after the process wasn't smooth for the Jaguars. Nothing seems to be in Jacksonville. But after a long, tumultuous month, after firing Doug Peterson, going through a coaching search with Trent Baalke, the general manager, helping with the search, maybe narrowing choices down so Baalke can keep a job, Liam Cohen turns them down. The Jaguars fire Trent Baalke, or part ways with Trent Baalke, and then bring Liam Cohen back, who's the Bucs offensive coordinator, back for a second interview. Boom, boom, hired. Long story short, we got Duval clips coming in. We got Duval memes from Liam Cohen in his opening press conference. Having said all that, and we'll talk about the press conference, I bet, but I'm excited about this. Not only about Cohen, what you have talked about a lot, what Cohen has done as offensive coordinator for the Bucs this year, and I think that was very valid. It held up throughout the year, throughout the injuries. Great quarterback play, great run game, really well-designed stuff. But also just the other ramifications of these moves. No more Baalke, which I think is a big move in Jacksonville, that they finally have a clean slate to merge or to join in unison their head coach, their GM, and we know who their franchise quarterback is in Trevor Lawrence. But Matt, as maybe Liam Cohen's number one fan, or at least on the Mount Rushmore, what are some of your thoughts, Cohen going to Jacksonville? Are you excited? Brian Thomas Jr. is there as well. What do you think they might need to add? Any thoughts that you have on this move as the ban has been lifted? So we have a lot to catch up on in Jacksonville.
So much to catch up on in Jacksonville, man. And, you know, actually a lot of exciting things going on, especially this Liam Cohen hire. And you're right. It was messy to get here. It was certainly, you know, messy on the Cohen Bucks side of things. I will say I did see – you know, Cohen saying that like all of his players were very supportive of like, go get this thing, from Baker to Mike Evans to Bucky Irving, you know, that makes sense. I'm sure Jason Light has feelings about how the whole thing went down and all that, and maybe some Bucks upper management, and you know, maybe it wasn't handled perfectly, whatever. But at the end of the day, like this is a rare opportunity for Liam Cohen. I think he put it that way. This is a once in a lifetime opportunity to be coach of one of the NFL teams, especially this team, because I think it's kind of tough. Like, is this a good job? Is it a bad job? Now that Balky's out of there, and basically I think Cohen gets to kind of have a lot of influence, if not just outright pick his general manager and really put together his staff. And you've pointed this out, Nate, and when people have asked me about this, like, why is Trent Baalke a bad general manager? And I've pointed to your analysis on this, that it isn't necessarily just the player selection stuff, because I think he has done some he's brought in some good players. I mean, obviously, yeah. Round one, Brian Thomas Jr., that's a grand slam draft pick. That isn't just a home run. it was an electric pick. He's made some good acquisitions, but beyond the fact that some of the players have been a little samey or overlapping skill sets and things like that, like narrow application, I do think that the biggest issue is the way he interferes with the coaching staff and things like that. So you've got that out of here. You've got a big payday here for Liam Cohen. You've got a lot of power for Liam Cohen here. And it is a roster that has some ability, especially on the offensive side of the football. I mean, they are going to have to fix the offensive line first and foremost. I'm a fan of Cohen's scheme and things like that. We can't talk about the Bucs offense last year without talking about the fact that they fixed that offensive line over the course of really two years. They draft Cody Mock. They draft Graham Barton this last year. Gadecki continues to get better. Ben Bredesen was a good signing by them. Like, that's going to be priority one. They've got to fix that offensive line or nothing's really going to work. But I did think it was interesting to hear Liam Cohen. I can't remember the radio station he was on, but talking about he was pleasantly surprised going back and watching this team on film, not just seeing their effort, but specifically seeing Brian Thomas Jr. and how he could line up in the slot. You know, and I thought this was interesting because he said it was like a pleasant surprise to see him be able
you
to do
that. You perked
up
when you saw that, huh?
Oh, yeah. No, I mean, beyond the fact that we're going to it'll now be fun to see every fantasy analyst decide, are they going to say, well, Brian Thomas Jr. will be playing the Mike Evans role, or Brian Thomas Jr. will be playing the Chris Godwin role? Like, now we get to do that. But I think he could be like his own animal in this offense. But I did look it up. 3.12 yards per route run from the slot in his rookie year for Brian Thomas Jr. So I think his speed and his playmaking ability in space is really going to be kind of the difference maker in that spot when they get him those free releases and things like that. And the last staff did a pretty good job of that too, but I think my faith in Cohen being able to do it is even higher.
What I like about Cohen, and especially what I saw this year, is, you know, he has a Rams background. He's very much a Sean McVay guy. But when I watched that offense, it was like, it wasn't just a straight where I was like, oh yeah, this is McVay, Shanahan all the way. It was a hybrid kind of offense. And I thought I think that's a feather in the cap of Cohen, that he was just not going like, oh, I'm control C, control V. You know, this is what I'm doing in this offense. Baker is a totally different quarterback than Matthew Stafford. Trevor Lawrence is a totally different quarterback than both of them. Adjusting to personnel, the injuries and stuff. It wasn't like he was like, I have to be an 11 personnel every play. It was like, oh no, we'll change it up. We'll have Co-Keefed out there. Like, we'll do things that will change up the personnel, and especially with injuries, kind of force their hand with some of that. But no matter what, guys knew what to do, which I always think matters. That you see like zero fat with the mental thinking. Guys knew exactly where to line up on stuff. The Brian Thomas Jr. thing is really interesting because anecdotally, I remember some red zone plays and maybe some play action plays where they put him in the slot, and that makes total sense because speed, size, get him over the middle and everything. That's throwing over the middle is another thing, is that I want to see Trevor Lawrence do more, because I always thought in my head, Trevor is a souped, like the high end version of Trevor, if he hits that ceiling, is a souped up version of Matt Ryan. And Matt Ryan's best throws are throwing over the middle, benders, digs. And I always thought the last staff kind of made it. They're like, oh, our O-line's not great. Oh, the dink and duck. Trevor's such a quick thrower, which is good. Like, yes, you can do that and be a part of the offense, but you don't make the whole, you know, plane out of it. And I thought this year, and really the second half of last year before they went on the losing streak, they started to implement some things that I was like, okay. And I think Cohen can kind of, you know, continue that. He also, like you said, there's 32 jobs. He has a franchise QB. There's no state income tax. And he's probably has some say in the GM. Like, any Bucks fans that were upset about this, I get, you know, losing a coordinator, you know, it's fine. This is what happens. Not a lot of guys are going to turn that job down and everything. But like you said, some execs might be unhappy. Looking at this team, I don't think being a McVay brained guy, I don't think he has any, bad thoughts or bad process where he's like, I don't need a line, blah, blah, blah. Like, I think he knows the lessons of what that is. And that's where my eyes go when I look at the Jags. It's Brandon Scherff's going to be a free agent. Mitch Morse is still their center, getting older, has had injury history. But really, the other free agents are Andre Sisco, who is a safety I do like, and Luke Farrell, who's a blocking tight end. I still think this team needs some interior offensive linemen. I like Harrison a lot, their right tackle. He had an up and down year, but his rookie year was great, which was another tip of the cap to Trent Baalke. Like, I thought that he hit on Harrison, who the line coach was meh. And that's what I'm also going to say. Cone might be able to bring in the offensive line coach from the Bucs. There's rumors that he's bringing some of the staff. That's Kevin Carberry, who I thought did a phenomenal job this last year with the Bucs. Obviously, he has some talent. But even before that, when he was with the Rams, he did a nice job as well, which I think would be a huge, huge hire for them because, kind of keep the good times going. But they need a tight end with some actual blocking ability, which speaks to what you're talking about, where my frustrations with Baalke, what you talked about, some sameness. And the term I always picked was fragile, which is because if one guy got hurt, no one else could step up in that role. There was not a lot of versatility with the players. There was a lot of guys that were kind of role players in their roles. And so that was like the Brent Strange draft pick. And I'm on record. There's video of me out there yelling that they should be drafting Tucker Kraft. When that pick happened, I flipped out on my old show because I was like, no, you have Evan Engram. This is the same player. They're the same player. What are you doing? Like, I flipped out. I was like, draft Tucker Kraft. And I was on record with that. And I still stand by it. That's where Luke Farrell, what they do with him. But like, Luke Farrell's not a needle mover. He's a guy that just, plays a dozen snaps and does some nice things. BTJ looks like a number one. Like, how high of a number one he is, but he looks like a number one, which is like, cool. Secondary pass catchers, Christian Kirk is still there, kind of figure out what else is the secondary pass catchers, but this is on him. These are the problems that they'll have to figure out probably with the GM as well. Luckily, they got some cap space and actually they got some draft collateral. The number 5 pick, the number 36 pick, number 70, number 88 from Minnesota and the Dallas Turner trade, I believe it was. And then they got Minnesota's 4th as well, the 125. So they got some stuff to work with here, which I think can make it really interesting, where I think if he hits it right in this division, they could really ramp up. People are optimistic about the Jags this year. I wasn't, but teams are optimistic about the Jags. Shoot, they can refresh this if they just kind of shore up around the edges on their roster. They have a quarterback. They really do. I know people are going to, whether he's worth it or not, Trevor's worth the money. And that's why Cone wanted to go there. And other guys like Ben Johnson wanted to go there. But I just really think they can really shore some things up. What were some of your thoughts on the press conference, though? I don't think anyone should be judging off this, but it is worth mentioning because it was pretty funny.
I feel like every criticism of a coach in a first time press conference, like the intro press conference for a new head coach, if you make like sweeping conclusions off it, those takes probably don't age well. Sirianni was terrible in his intro presser, or came off a little weird. He's in his second Super Bowl in 4 seasons. Dan Campbell obviously was memed to death with the biting the kneecaps, and he's been obviously a super successful head coach. So
Jonathan Gannon's whole first off season, it was weird video after weird video.
And I mean, definitely the Cardinals didn't make the playoffs, to kind of flounder down the stretch, but they're in a much better position right now than they were before Gannon took over. I think that all those takes usually don't age very well. Cone definitely, the Duval, I'll tell you what, buddy, if I was put in that position, I probably wouldn't sound all that cool saying Duval. No, I'd be like, yeah, Duval. But I'm also not a head coach of a football team. I don't have to be the motivator of men, anything like that. So yeah, it wasn't great. But that's ultimately not what he's going to be judged on there.
Absolutely not. It's going to be getting the quarterback right and winning games. That's really the 1 and 2 of it. I know. And even like the opposite of that, Brandon Staley killed his opening press conference.
Oh, Brandon Staley was like the press conference god your favorite like football writer couldn't stop quote tweeting his press conferences or whatever. Like, yeah, this guy get, he was a this guy gets it candidate, for a while there until, he didn't get it anymore. until he got the pink slip.
not going to work here anymore. It also reminded me of my old head coach from Wisconsin, Brett Bielema, when he went to Arkansas, they did the Woo Pig Suey. And he thought they were going to just do it once, and you can tell. And Brett's a great guy, and it's just so funny because you can tell he does a ooh pig suey, and then they do it ooh, and they start doing it again, and you can tell him and his wife are like, oh we're doing it again.
Oh, yeah.
And, like, oh, pig suey. And then they're like ooh, and he's like, you can see them looking around, going, oh we're doing it again. Oh okay, but that's what that reminded me of, the Duval thing, of more than anything. So yeah,
you should have practiced it a couple of times in the mirror, the project, you know, the hotel mirror or something like that. Give it a couple of goes. I would have maybe rehearsed it, but you know, again, minor criticism for a guy that I do think really deserves this opportunity. You know, one thing I also was looking with Brian Thomas Jr. too, 17 screen targets in year one, 17 catches for 179 yards, over 10 yards per route run on screens.
What are you going with?
That screen game was awesome in Tampa last year. And I thought particularly, not always with the wide receivers, with like the running backs and the tight ends. Mm-hmm. And I think that was kind of one of the first things that really not like, oh, this is a good offense, to being like, oh, this guy really is pushing the right buttons here, was when Godwin got hurt and they basically made Kate Otten kind of their power slot receiver there for a minute but while Mike Evans was also hurt. So I'm very interested to see like some of these screen concepts being here, because I think that the Jaguars screen game for a lot of the Doug Peterson era, especially in 23, I mean,
oh stunk. God, so, that was so frustrating. Oh, I know, it's like to Jamal Agnew. You know, like, yeah, those screens were very, very frustrating. No, I'm with you. That was the Bucs offense has kind of led to a theory of mine about receiver screens, or de facto receiver screens, are the canary in the coal mine for a good offensive ecosystem. And that's a credit to what they were at right now. No, I'm curious where they go with what they think Trevor's strengths are too, because Cone showed that he can be gun heavy with Baker. He'll be under center. What he was at Kentucky and with the Rams. So, and I think Trevor can do both. So I'm curious to see what he thinks Trevor's strengths are, because so far he shows that he can adapt the offense for that. That's why we saw all those out routes to Sterling Shepard this year. Another month one football 301 discussion point. All right. Moving on up north to the team that lost out actually on Trevor Lawrence because of a late season win. That is, see how I segued there? The New York Jets hired Aaron Glenn, a former Jets player, former defensive coordinator of the Lions, did a fantastic job. I believe both of our assistant coach of the year award winner, Aaron Glenn.
Well, or yeah, who'd you go with? So.
Yeah, yeah,
I did go Glenn.
Didn't that feel like, it felt like a year ago, and that was 2 weeks ago we did that show.
I was going to say, that feels like 1,000 years ago we had that conversation. Too.
It's like, did I give it to somebody else? Did I go with something crazier? Yeah, but Aaron Glenn, of course, did a great job with the Lions this year, and he's ready for that New York media. I tell you what, he came out guns blazing. He was not going to get pushed around. He's like standing there. He's like, no, I'm setting the bar. This is where we're starting with. What do you think about this though? Oh, also Darren Mogi, I believe is how you say it. Hired from as their general manager, coming from Denver. Now, kind of some fuel for Garrett Wilson trade stuff. But anyways, I don't know. He's following a bunch of Broncos on Instagram. Anyways. What do you think about Glenn to the Jets, Matt Harmon? Where do they go from here?
There's a lot of like Denver, Detroit, post-Detroit guys, like the, you know, kind of mingling here that we're going to talk about and the saintiness of it too. Like there's a lot of things going on. Yeah. Somewhere Sean Payton just like fist pumped when you said that the screen game is the indicator or the canary in the coal mine of good offense. Yeah. That is Sean Payton.
He's like, check out my canary.
Yeah. Right. I got all the canaries back here.
Hey, how about the Sean Payton coaching tree? That like Sean Payton coaching tree is having a moment right now. Oh man, it just like flowered.
That's what I'm saying, man. And I think it goes overlooked of how much like Detroit was a part of that. You know, obviously because of Dan Campbell, but even like Ben Johnson shares some roots there. And again, we'll get to all that here. But specifically it sounds like Glenn might be. I think Josina Anderson from CBS was saying he might be looking at Tanner Engstrand, the passing game coordinator, as his offensive coordinator. So that's definitely interesting. But yeah, I talked a lot about Glenn on the last episode we did about coaching, and I really like this hire here. I think he's perfect for what this team needs from both a culture perspective, a motivation perspective for some of these players that are on the roster that maybe took a step back last season. And I'm with you that, you know, seeing him go back and forth in the scrum about getting like, you know, like I'm not going to answer the same question, you know, a bunch of times when it comes to Aaron Rodgers, and he literally said to some of the reporters, like, yeah, you're not going to get me. Like, I gave that answer already, you know, and like, I'm looking for a winner, and I'm looking for somebody mentally tough at the quarterback position. And I look, the big bad New York media is going to come in here and swallow this head coach up. Well, definitely not to Aaron Glenn. So that doesn't mean everything. Again, intro press conference isn't an indicator of who's going to be a good head coach, who's going to be a bad head coach. But regardless, I thought Glenn was the right hire here. And I also think it's good that he's not going to call defensive plays, which he talked about. He said, I'm the head coach, you know, and I'm going to let my assistants do their job. We'll see. Obviously, maybe the defense gets off to a rough start in week 7. We're talking through headlines of Aaron Glenn takes defensive play calling duties back, right? That's possible. But regardless, I like the idea coming in here that, I mean, it's actually former Jets interim head coach Jeff Ulbrich in his intro press conference said this week that my biggest regret was trying to still run the defense after getting the promotion to head coach. So I like that Glenn will be that. He seems like he is intent on being that CEO type of head coach. I think that's what the Jets need.
Yeah. And really, this feels like the first kind of, maybe I'm missing on the coach in my brain, but like the first coach since Rex Ryan, who really wanted this job, that kind of will toy back with the New York media, which I think you kind of have to do, especially with the Jets franchise where they're at. No, I think also too, when you're not taking play calling duties first as a head coach, give yourself some cushion, you know, give yourself a little ability to pivot. Like you said, in week 6, week 8, that's not going well. It gives you a little, you know, maybe a little human meat shield to throw out there as well. I like that his, I mean, he's a fairly young coach, quote unquote, as far as resume wise, but the guy's been around the league for so long. And so he gets how this NFL is. He obviously gets through to his players. His players love him. That's one thing that Salah got his guys doing too, is that how fast he got the guys play, how physical. And I think Glenn can keep that going. I don't think his style, he might be a little more brash than Robert Saleh was, but as far as the energy is going to be there, and I think the underlying philosophy is still the same. Play fast, play physical, all that, play tough. I did think it was interesting, the Rodgers stuff, just because you know that he put thought into it, and rather than toying it, he was like, you know, this was a quote I saw too. Aaron Rodgers will be talked about, said near the end of his opening remarks. We've already texted that communication with Aaron Rodgers, and we continue to look at the roster. We'll make decisions accordingly, and that's with the number of people on the team. And then in the scrum afterwards, he said, this thing is not about Aaron Rodgers. It's about the roster, which I just thought, I think that's nice, just being able to, I wouldn't say nipping it in the bud, but setting precedent. Be going like, okay, this is about the Jets, guys. Where this was a circus. Okay, we got to reset that this is about the Jets and what the Jets franchise is going to do, which I liked. It's not mean. It's not calling anyone out. It's just set and being very blunt about what we at, where we're at, and what we should be doing, which I liked. The Tanner Engstrand as offensive coordinator. God, that feels like a video game generated name. But he's as offensive coordinator, I looked him up a little bit. Lions kind of is his most recent background, obviously, but just truly his NFL background's through there. Had an analyst role at Michigan. I want to say it was under Harbaugh. He was which this actually makes sense now that I just say it out loud. He was the DC Defenders offensive coordinator in the XFL under Pep Hamilton. And that makes a lot more sense now because Pep Hamilton is a Harbaugh guy. So that makes a lot of sense. Coach tight ends. Interested. I can't say I know anything about him, but I know if this is his offensive background, I can very much picture when I hear Harbaugh and I hear Lions recently, which is Sean Payton. So it's going to be physical. It's going to be under center. I'm curious which quarterback they go through, but that's for them to determine, figure out what they go through there. But that's the next thing to get to decide. But I like this. I think this one made sense a lot in my brain, and it's an interesting team, but you know, they can retool it. If they kind of just got to nail that quarterback spot though.
My guess is it won't be Rodgers, right? I mean, I agree with you that I like the way he approached it, saying like, you know, it's about the roster, not about Aaron Rodgers. Cause I think if, one of the criticisms you can give the last staff is that they were in the unfortunate position of being on Hard Knocks, and a lot of this stuff got out, but it sounded like they were just in awe of Rodgers, which I understand because he's Aaron freaking Rodgers, but like that stuff wears out pretty quick when you're not winning games. And obviously he gets injured and then they have nothing else to stand on. Yeah. So it just, the whole thing was built on Rodgers' back. And when his Achilles gave out his back, you know, he's not able to hold the whole thing up. So I like that this is more of a resetting, that this is not about Rodgers. I don't imagine he's going to be back with his team. I could believe it either way. If he comes back, if he retires, I have no idea. But yeah, the Jets definitely have to get it. I think they probably go veteran quarterback, you know,
yeah.
And probably just try to set some level of a floor here with the operation in year one.
I know. And that's, and like right now, I mean, the quarterback seats are going to be so interesting. Because then you get that kind of high-end backup tier, which is like Jacoby Brissett or Jameis or something of that sort. It's like, do you want to go down that path? But they might need to. Like, that's the thing. I don't think they want to start that quarterback timeline again. I think they need a big, big deep breath on the whole quarterback stuff, which might turn this into a not lame duck, but kind of a neutral year. I won't say rebuilding, a retooling year, but who knows?
Transition
the rest
year?
Of the rosters. Transition year? That's probably the best word, I think, Matt, because it's a new coach and everything. But no, I like this again. Like I said, I'm very curious with the offensive decisions that they go from here. I think Rodgers runs it back somewhere else. I think he gets a 1-year deal somewhere because I don't think he likes how that ended for him. I don't think anyone would like how that ended. And thank you for bringing up the Hard Knocks thing, because I actually blacked that out of my brain. The whole propaganda and those episodes, the heavy PR usage about how good Rodgers is that we got to see that first, those couple episodes. So that was a,
didn't
nice
Ulbrich,
memory jog.
Not to pick on him again, but
yes,
didn't he have
did.
Like a,
and
he had
was,
like,
yes, yes, that's our quarterback. He's like, that's our quarterback, like that, guys, in the meeting. Yeah,
we got that guy or whatever. Yeah, it was very, and yeah, again,
and they're showing everyone like, woo!
Yeah, everyone's gassed up about it. Was leave Shriver's landing a damn helicopter on the on the practice. I actually haven't watched Hard Knocks in years, because all the things you need to see from it find their way onto social media, and like that's good. But and very I get true. Enough, I get enough football in my life. I don't need to be like, all right, let's sit down and watch more football.
I put on HBO. I put on Max to watch like other things, to watch the Penguin, to watch more Hard Knocks. I do like Hard Knocks. Don't get me wrong.
Totally.
Last thing, I am curious to see Sauce Gardner in this. If it's heavy man-to-man coverage, defense, follow everywhere you go. Curious to see that and him in that role, because it could be really fun. Could be a leap forward year for Sauce after a really fun rookie year and kind of up and down second year. All right, that we are going to take our first break, and then we're going to come back with a couple more hires in Las Vegas and in Dallas. All right, we are back with a couple more NFL head coaching hires. Las Vegas Raiders, my local team. I'm wearing all black actually right now. Not because I'm robbing anywhere. Yeah, I know. Unmarked. I'm like a Marvel character in normal clothes. The Raiders, though, and that was kind of a little bit of a shocker to me, but maybe it shouldn't be, is they went with Pete Carroll. It's good after a 1-year sabbatical, after leaving the longtime coach of the Seahawks, USC, Jets, Patriots, amongst other stops. Pete Carroll is now in Las Vegas on a 3-year deal, which I think was also interesting, probably because there's some other coaching staffs that the Raiders are paying right now. But Pete Carroll in Las Vegas with general manager Sky, I keep wanting to call him Skynet. it's not fair to him. I'm sorry. with John Spytek, who came from the Bucks, I actually thought maybe, does he go to Tampa? But they, or does he go to Jacksonville? But they announced it and everything, did the pictures, all that fun stuff. So, what are some thoughts, Pete Carroll, Raiders? Where do we go from here? But I just want to hear your thoughts when you saw this, Matt, and where they're gonna go.
Yeah, I also was a little bit like, I have no idea where the Raiders are going to go, because it seemed very, you know, they were hot and heavy with Ben Johnson or whatever. Obviously, Mark Davis is like, no, not true. After
how
the fact.
Much? Double digits a year?
Yeah, right. Although, hey, Mark's got himself more money now. You know, he sold off parts of this franchise, things like that. He's got some more money in the bank.
If you ever notice the percentage, because they said, you know, VC companies can, you know, buy into NFL teams now. Interesting how much stake the Raiders sold compared to everybody else. Everybody else, 3%, 4%, 5%, 8%. Raiders, like 20%.
20%, like, baby.
Got it.
Yeah, so they got some more money to pay off those old coaching staffs and maybe a lawsuit, and also Pete Carroll here in the new staff. I'm kidding about the lawsuit with the Gruden stuff, but yeah, I don't know. Anyways, so with Pete Carroll, 73 years old, 3-year deal. This actually makes a lot of sense to me, because I do kind of view this Raiders roster and honestly, the whole situation is kind of a blank slate, man. Yeah. And I feel like Pete Carroll's going to come in here and just, you know, build a program with a lot of effort and things like that. Mm-hmm. And, you know, things went stale for Pete, I think, towards the end of Seattle, but like, you really can't argue with the resume here. I was so impressed with what they did over the years in Seattle. And, you know, obviously I think, I don't know if I want to call this managing Russell Wilson, but like kind of catering a little to him and keeping that offense into what it needed to be and kind of ignoring the public cries like, why isn't Russell doing more? Like, why aren't we letting Russ cook? Which we'll get to here with the former Seahawks coordinator in a second. why aren't we letting Russ cook more? What's the deal? Like, I think actually Pete had a good vision for what made Russell successful and things like that. I think he has aged well after that breakup, even though, again,
he's the big winner that whole timeline. I think totally. So. And yep.
Yeah. So I think he's a good guy to come in here and start similar to what I said with Aaron Glenn, but maybe even more of a proven commodity where you're going to come in here and like set the floor. You're going to get guys playing hard. I think you're going to be able to hire pretty good staff here. I'm sure people are going to dunk on the fact that like they're talking to Daryl Bevel, but I mean, Daryl Bevel's had some good ideas in the past. He had that one, I don't remember what year it was, but I think his last year in Detroit, they were like pushing the ball down the field with Matthew Stafford and Kenny Golladay. Kind of actually the first moment where Matthew Stafford gets out of the Jim Bob Cooter offense when they put the Ferrari in the garage and be like, yeah, you got like the best arm in the NFL. Why don't you dink and dunk that thing a little bit? Why don't we throw pop passes to Theo Riddick and Golden Tate? Maybe we'll make that the offense. And then Daryl Bevel comes in and is like, nah, we're launching it to this 6'4 freak show, Kenny Golladay on the outside, and he's going to go get himself paid by the Giants in a bad contract, whatever, doesn't matter. So, just kind of offense level setting, like we're going to be professional around here, is probably what they needed after last year when things were, you know, really messy with the Raiders there. You know, Antonio Pierce just didn't have a lot of experience. You're going on the complete other end of the experience here with Pete Carroll. I like the hire. I'm curious what you think, and I'm curious what you think like comes next with Carroll and the quarterback position and all that stuff.
Yeah, I like the hire. I mean, I really do. It was kind of like the Raiders, it's a tough situation just because of what they are, where they're at, what division they're in. You know, you're not going to get the cream of the crop as far as coaching candidates, as much as, you know, Tom Brady made a push for Ben Johnson, or Ben Johnson's agent did a lot of work there, whichever one worked out there. But as I've marinated on this, I'm like, I like this. I think, you know, when Pete took over Seattle, they weren't much. They're paying Matt Flynn. And then they drafted Russell Wilson and ended up benching Matt Flynn after they paid him to go with Russell Wilson. But just kind of saying they were in the same situation of like, we don't really have a quarterback post Hasselbeck. We got to reconfigure this roster. What are we good at? Which turned out to be give it to, you know, Marshawn Lynch over and over again, as Hasselbeck went away after the Beastquake and everything.
I was going to say, I actually think it was 2010 when Pete got to Seattle. And I think they did have... They had Hasselbeck that year, and then I think that wasn't it the they but they also had like Charlie Whitehurst. I think they had like a Tavarius Jackson
Clipboard year. Jesus.
Yeah, and I think so. It wasn't until 2012. So they had 2 years with Carroll before they landed on. They paid Matt Flynn and then benched him for Russ. So I think that's kind of what I imagine it looks like here. They don't have a Matt Hasselbeck. Yeah, they had O'Connell. They might like get a veteran in here to like mix it up with O'Connell, you know?
Yeah, it was funny because as I was saying that, I was like, wait, Hasselbeck handed off the ball on the Beastquake. So I was like, he was still there for at least a year. Like even my memory kind of brought it back. It's kind of funny is that those early Seahawks teams and even later was that, you know, the personalities, as everyone knows, all the personalities, not even just like, you know, Russ on offense, but just you got Marshawn Lynch on offense. Then on defense, you got all those guys, Bennett, Richard Sherman, Earl Thomas. I mean, just the list goes on and on of all types of competitors. And that's what he even said in his opening quote or his opening press conference is like, he wants competition. It all starts with competition, Carroll said, and he repeated the theme throughout the news conference. You're either competing or you're not, and which is something I stand by too. It's just that you got to compete. You got to make yourself better. He's going to bring it. He is the guy that put basketball hoops in team meetings, and everyone does that now. Like he's doing the forewords for motivation books. You know, like he is one of these guys that was at an older age, I wouldn't say innovative, but maybe was trying to find different ways to motivate his players that maybe were more new age or more open-minded, which is kind of the irony of the older coach being that guy, I think is really cool. And that's how Pete Carroll's always kind of been. In the weirdest way, because he even described, I think, those locker rooms in Seattle as the island of misfit toys, which is another phrase I love. Doesn't that feel like a Raiders coach? We're competitive. We have a whole bunch of Island Misfit toys. Maybe the personalities aren't for everybody, but they're Raiders. And that's kind of what the Raiders always pride themselves in. We find guys that no one else would touch. Like, they were one of the first teams to go after HBCU guys. Like, they were willing to do all that. We're going after speed. We're going after these types of guys. And I think that's, Pete matches that kind of perfectly. So it's one of those at first I was like, sure. And as I've marinated for a few, 48 hours, 72 hours, I'm like, I like this. It's a fun division now. All four coaches are pretty fun in that AFC West. All of them are older than 60, which I think is kind of funny too, after the whole youth movement we've had at the coaching side.
Pete Carroll, Jim Harbaugh back in the same division, baby. How can you not like that?
How can you not? No, just continue that battle.
In college.
I brought up the pictures. I think I tweeted it, and then finding those old USC Stanford gear. And it's like, man, we've come a long way with gear too. Like with all the Nike gear that they had on too. I meant to bring this, but speaking of Raiders, was their old defense coordinator, Patrick Graham, interviewed with Jacksonville for the head coaching spot, but they might hire him as defensive coordinator. I think he should be one of the top defensive coordinators available for everybody. Yeah, I meant to bring this up with the Jack stuff, but talking about bad process with the Jacks, that was messy too.
That was, not great.
So even if they end up with a good hire, it's Jags. Might end up with a good result, but the process has just been sloppy and messy too. But I did have to bring that up. Bringing up Bevel. Bevel is a fine NFL play caller. Like, he is above the threshold of he is one of the guys in the middle to above average. So it's one of those where people are pulling their hair out. I'm like, I don't think you have to do that. Like, he's fine. Like, he's not going to make you angry about anything. Like, he knows how to run an NFL offense. So we'll see. I think some
he
of
spent
the things
the last few years in Miami too, which I think could be like, if he takes anything from that scheme, would be interesting.
Yeah, actually. Yeah. That's a great point. I think at the end, Pete's very loyal to his guys, players and coaches. And I think some of the assistants maybe did him, not like did anything bad, but maybe promoted guys, maybe went with guys and trusted them, and he kind of stood by them. And I think that's really good. I think I'm curious if some of those guys follow him now to the Raiders, and we'll see as the kind of assistant coaching carousel continues as well. But I like this hire. Going on to another interesting process, a team with an interesting process, I should say, the Dallas Cowboys. Hire Brian Schottenheimer. Yes, they did. On a Friday's news drop, news dump, I should say. Monday, yesterday, they announced him, where Jerry Jones started talking about Barry Switzer, started talking about not going to the Senior Bowl, as they asked him about Brian Schottenheimer for some reason. Talk about risk-taking.
Made himself cry about himself.
Made himself cry. He's a character. He's a method actor, Matt. He's a method actor. What are some of your thoughts on the Cowboys, Brian Schottenheimer, the whole experience going down in Big D?
Our colleague and co-host on this show, Charles McDonald, in our text group chat yesterday said that he felt like half of his brain had been pulled out of his ears with a syringe after being at that press conference. And
I should read his exact quote.
He said, by the time it was over, I felt like half of my brain had been pulled out of my ears with a syringe. When he started crying about how good he was at hiring coaches, liquefied. That was Charles's exact text about this, which I think, that about did it. I wasn't sure what my favorite part was when he did bring himself to tears, talking about how good he was.
In the first question, I think.
When Jerry brought up that he originally wanted to be a coach, but gave up on that dream because they weren't going to make enough money. But now because everybody knows Jerry doesn't want to pay coaches, which is pretty outrageous. He said, if I saw what they were making now, I'd have been a coach if I knew what they were going to make now. Talking about like he doesn't take risks. He points to the guy just hired as a head coach.
I'm glad you bring this up.
This is the biggest risk I could take, which is unbelievable. So again, the press conference was something out of a freaking cartoon or something. I have no idea. It's you couldn't script it. Oh, also, by the way, very funny when they intro Brian Schottenheimer, everybody claps, and then they intro Stephen Jones and he has to do the Jeb Bush, like, please clap, because nobody claps for him. Yeah, so pretty crazy stuff going on there in Dallas right now, which is that's what this is right now. It is outrageous. The press conference is suited for what's going on here. And here's the thing, man, like, I think maybe Brian Schottenheimer could be a good head coach. Who knows? I mean, no idea. Like, real, we're not good at this. We're ultimately not good at deciding who is going to be a good head coach and who's not going to be a good head coach. But the process of how they arrived at it's almost like Kenny Pickett, right? When the Steelers took Kenny Pickett, the first thing everybody says, like, yeah, we went all around the country to find the girl next door, you know, because he was literally in the building because he quarterbacked at University of Pitt.
Yeah.
I mean, at least they went
literally next door because they share the same building.
They share the same building. I mean, and the Cowboys just walked down the hall and said, "How about this? How about you? You want to do this?" Because they interviewed a very small, insular set of people as well. So, I think Schottenheimer in his press conference talked about smart things. You know, having motion, being dynamic, and on offense, and things like that. Playing with tempo, all that stuff. I think that's fine. And I think there's been times throughout Schottenheimer's career, where, you know, some of the times with Seattle, I thought he was doing some pretty good stuff as the offensive coordinator. But man, I mean, it's just, we talked about this last time that when the Schottenheimer stuff was sort of percolating, it was like, I was playing Madden in my basement in high school when it was like, oh, time to fire your head coach in Madden franchise mode. How about Brian Schottenheimer as a head coaching candidate? It's like, I don't think we're going to do that. That was a long time ago that he was even getting head coaching interviews. So I don't know, man. We'll see what happens here. But I think the process to arrive at the Schottenheimer stuff and everything that's happened afterwards is questionable, to say the least.
So I was in high school. So when I was in high school, Schottenheimer was the San Diego Chargers quarterbacks coach. And I remember, I want to say he helped out, you know, because they would have NFL coaching staffs do the Senior Bowl. And he was the quarterback, and I was not there in high school. This is just a anecdotal story of my dad in a conversation with somebody else. And I want to say it was like Scott Linehan or something. And they were talking. Oh, the Senior Bowl, yeah, you know, and someone was like, you know, that little Schottenheimer is pretty good. You know, he's got some potential maybe to be a head coach. Like, just said it offhand like that. That was 23 years ago, 22 years ago. And I was like, they got there. Like, the call was early, but they got there. I mean, but just going off what you're saying, it's like, I remember his name since then. And that was when he was like, he was like almost like an original Kyle Shanahan, where it was like, you know, coach's kid, got the early tab to call plays, was on these teams because I think Kyle was like 28 when he started calling plays with Houston. So kind of the same thing when he went to the Jets. When he went to the Jets, he was what, 33? At that time, that was crazy. The 30-year-old play caller, oh my God, you know, now it happens all the time. So he might be fine. You never know. That's why I don't want to like just go like, oh, he's going to be awful. Like, some guys have skills for different positions. Like, I would even like rate my dad as a good O-line coach and a solid head coach. Not a good coordinator. You know, like, certain guys just have better strengths for certain things. So maybe, and Schottenheimer is the one strength that everyone comes back to, is his people skills are really good. And that might matter when you're in Dallas and you have to deal with a lot of people. And at least, this is joking, but at least Dak knows the language of the offense, I guess. Because wasn't that like the big argument for this? Like, hey, so we don't change the offensive language on Dak? And it was like, okay, I guess. But maybe at least, you know, Dak likes him, the quarterback likes him. They did get rid of, or Scott Tolzien parted ways, their quarterback coach. I know him. Mike Zimmer seems out. He's out. And they're bringing in Matt Eberflus, defense coordinator. Fine. I like him as a defensive play caller.
Sure. But
I was kind of liking the Zimmer.
I know. Yeah. By the end of the season, I thought one of the more compelling reasons to keep McCarthy around was that he was going to keep Zimmer around. Yes. And like, you're going to kind of build on that. Cause yeah, I think Eberflus is a fine defensive coordinator. I do think that's another defense. I talk about this when I'm charting wide receivers, when we go against like the Gus Bradley, the old Legion of Boom stuff, very comfortable feeling. Quarters, same thing with the Matt Eberflus stuff, you know, like it's kind of zone heavy. Like, all right, let's see our Z here. What's our Z doing against the zone heavy Matt Eberflus scheme? You know, it's fine. Like, hiring Eberflus is fine. It's not, he's actually got familiarity there, cause he used to be a linebackers coach there. Was that like during the Sean Lee years?
It was. Good call.
Man, we're going throwbacks here. I love this.
We are.
you know who led the team in targets, Pete Carroll's second year at the Seattle Seahawks? Doug Baldwin, undrafted free agent out of Stanford. Again, the Stanford stuff comes up there. But anyways, the Brian Schottenheimer thing, he could be fine as a head coach. I don't know. But it just speaks to the overall kind of vibe of Dallas right now. It's very insular. It's very small. Yeah, they probably don't want to pay big money to a head coach, get somebody in there who's going to shake things up. They want to do things their way. And I just don't think that their way is serious enough to compete for a championship. And I don't think they're serious enough to compete for a championship. But this is another outrageous part of that press conference. Stephen Jones, Jerry Jones's son, when he said the championship drought, Super Bowl drought that they're on, it's like, brother, yeah, no, that's not that's not somebody's opinion. That's not somebody came up with a take. No,
it's a fact.
You haven't been in, been in a friggin' championship game. You haven't been near a Super Bowl anytime recently. Nope. I saw this somewhere, scrolling on Instagram. Jaden Daniels and Jalen Hurts have been born, gone to college, graduated college, and have made NFL starts between the time Dallas was in the championship game. And those guys were in the championship game last week. So, and that's another thing, too. Now it's not just all right, yeah, Dallas can beat the shit out of Washington and the Giants in the regular season and pump that record up. No, one of those teams, I don't know about the Giants, one of those teams now is a serious contender in the NFC and is doing things the right way, shaking things up with new ownership, shaking things up with the front office, has a freaking quarterback. And I mean, I think Dak is a good quarterback. Their offense will probably be fine. Schottenheimer's going to call the plays, I guess. When was the last time Schottie even called plays? Was it in Seattle? Yeah,
the Urban Meyer Jaguars here to bring a full circle with Bevel.
That's right. Yeah, he was on that staff. So yeah, this is not the time you need to be screwing around. And again, even if I think maybe Schottenheimer could be a good head coach, I'm not trying to judge him too soon. Right. This does feel like a screwing around moment here.
It feels like a shrug it feels like they should be hard planning to do something. This should be, I mean, they have a quarterback entering his prime or in his prime right now. They have pieces that can work, and it's just like they're shrugging at this. They have one of the best defenders in the league. They have one of the best receivers in the league. They have things that a lot of teams want, and they still just kind of do this. It just felt like a good opportunity for them to, you want the head coach and the GM to kind of be in unison. The GM is the Joneses. It's Jerry and Steven, so kind of they're never going to go anywhere. But they you want just something different. And he just went for his inner circle again, or a comfortable face or a familiar face, I should say, which was oh, and so it's like a shrug. So that's why I don't want to damn Schottenheimer for any of this, for being the head coach of the Cowboys. Just the process just always kind of leaves you wanting more with them, and which is just a continuation of their last 12 months. I mean, not even 12 months, I would say 5, 6, 7, 8 years, but going, letting some head coaches go on for too long, letting contracts go until the last minute to re-sign them, to extend them, not addressing holes on the roster, not doing anything in free agency, yada, 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 just shrug, shrug, shrug. And it's kind of like another shrug that might work out. We don't know. Maybe Dak and Schottenheimer create some magic, but right now it just kind of feels like a shrug.
There. One last thing we got to get on the record here, because this goes all the way back to the 10 p.m. Eastern announcement on Friday, which I mean, to news dump your head coach on a head coaching announcement on a Friday when everybody is out at bars or asleep.
And the most publicity starved team that loves attention. They're like, no, Friday news dump.
Yeah. And just to be clear, I said people are either out at bars or going to bed. I was definitely the latter, not the former. At 9:40 Eastern. When they put this one out, Adam Schefter tweeted, quote from Jerry Jones, Brian Schottenheimer is known as a career assistant. He ain't Brian no more. He's now known as the head coach of the Dallas Cowboys. I mean, what does that even mean?
It's just
I'm fired. I'm fired up. Is he trying to
motivate them? Is he trying to make the fan base feel? I don't know. That's the thing. It's where is this all going? Someone said, it's not Jerry's world anymore, it's Jerry's universe. And I feel like that's the best way to kind of put it, that we're all living in, have to wade through. Not Wade Phillips, though. All right, we're going to take our last break, and then we're going to come back with some assistant hires that happened throughout the NFL the past week. All right, we are back. Assistant coaching hires that happened this past week. Starting off, Ben Johnson hires 28-year-old Declan Doyle as his offensive coordinator. Doyle is actually the son, I believe, of Chris Doyle, the controversial strength coach.
More Urban Meyer's Jaguar talk, by the way.
Oh my God. God, we just can't get... See, Jags band got lifted. Look, we can't we're stop
all,
now. We're
Jags in all three blocks, baby.
It's the Jag show. Doyle was a Iowa student assistant, then offensive assistant for the Saints with probably under Sean Payton there, it looks like. No, yeah, Sean Payton, and then on to Dennis Allen. Follows Payton as a tight ends coach and now is the offensive coordinator. There's that whole Sean Payton tie to Detroit, to Chicago, to Ben Johnson, like just everything. These guys were that tree is booming right now. Any thoughts on Declan Doyle? Because I just am like, well, he's probably going to just keep running the same offense, and Ben Johnson probably has a lot of input on this. So that's kind of my thought on it. But it's interesting that they go with a 28, a very, very young offensive coordinator here.
Yeah, I thought it would be interesting if Ben Johnson was kind of paired with a Hank Fraley type, you know, offensive line coach as the offensive coordinator. Have Ben Johnson specialize in some of the pass game concepts. You know, he's going to have such a big hand in Caleb Williams' development that maybe you just kind of sort of let a Hank Fraley, which Hank Fraley was promoted. We'll get to the lines in a second, but he was promoted to be the run game coordinator, offensive line coach. Probably got himself some more money there, so he might be doing that with Detroit, where I thought he might do that here in Chicago. You know, get somebody like of that mold, and you know, have that kind of like let them be the coordinator of the run game and manage the offensive line, all that stuff. Yeah, pretty much. No, you come in here with Declan Doyle, who was the tight ends coach. And I do think it's interesting. The tight end coach to coordinator pipeline is interesting because you get your hands in both phases, right? I mean, this is why tight end is such a slow developing position, at least in my opinion, in the NFL, is because you got to block. I mean, I've talked to George Kittle about this. He's like, you got to block like a tackle and run routes like a wide receiver, you know, and for these young guys, a lot of them can specialize in one of them, but not both. So, but as the coordinator or the tight ends coach, you got to have a really good sense of how the run game operates, but you've also got to obviously be involved in the passing game as well. So that'll be interesting if Doyle can fill that kind of role on this staff. And again, I do think it's interesting that it's funny, like coming into this year, and we'll get to Clint Kubiak actually here in a second too. When Kubiak was hired to be the offensive coordinator for the Saints, I was like, this is good for New Orleans because they need some new ideas. Weirdly, I feel like the one guy who I'm not interested off this tree is Pete Carmichael, who was the offensive coordinator for the Saints for a long time and just, I don't think, knew how to push the buttons like Peyton could. But now the rest of the league seems to be very interested in plucking off of this tree, which I think is fascinating.
Yeah, I do too. I'm all for it because it's the same offensive philosophy I believe in. So I'm like, yeah, bring some of this back. So I'm all about it. It's a very sound system. It can be a little wordy, but it's very as much the rules of it are offensive line based. Sean Payton is not a fool, and everyone thinks of him as a passing game guy. He wants to build through the lines, and he wants to invest in offensive lines. And I think that rubs off on his kind of, you know, his mentors or mentees, I should say, you know, or people that have come from the tree. I think they think the same way as well. And even you're bringing up the tight end connection, same with the new Jets offense coordinator, Tanner, is that he had a tight end year as well as coaching tight ends as well. It's because that if you're not the quarterback coach, all right, let's get you to tight ends because of what you said, you have to have a hand in everything or a finger in everything. I think
was really it McVay the like the tight ends coach years yes. ago with the with
play
Washington?
Caller and tight ends coach, which is a rare kind of combo. Very rare combo. Might see that in college sometimes, but not the NFL. Yeah, usually I'm a big believer that the play caller should be in the quarterback room. That is something I believe in because you don't want too many chefs in the kitchen. But yeah, that is a kind of interesting combo. I'm trying to think some other ones. There's a lot more now because this is kind of the trend that's going through, especially with tight ends. I think the biggest thing for the Bears is the offensive line coach. You just mentioned it, not bringing in Hank Fraley. You know, I was curious if he would go somewhere. That looks like they're interviewing some college guys, including one I'm familiar with, Joe Rudolph, who is the offensive line coach at Notre Dame. Another Badger, another tight end to now offensive line, but tight end coach, I should say, to offensive line coach, but whatever. Then I think that is huge for them because of how much I think that building inside out is going to be huge. And I think Ben Johnson knows the relationship with the line coach is huge as well. So that's kind of where my eyes are gravitating more than offensive coordinator, you know, because I feel like Johnson's got it. You know, Johnson's shown me enough that I think he has a good handle on it. And I'm excited to see what he does with Caleb in the whole offense, really. But moving on, the Lions, replacing Ben Johnson, hire John Morton, not a 28-year-old. John Morton has called plays in the NFL a few times. Formerly of the Jets in 2017,
I think it was. 17. Which by the way, again, God, I love this is like my favorite type of analysis. Is remember this? That was the year that Josh McCown was the quarterback for the 2017 Jets. Because I was also looking this because I remembered him being the offensive coordinator for the Jets. He otherwise John Morton is he's been in that Lions building in 22. Was with the Broncos the last 2 years with the Raiders, and obviously again. Saints wide receiver coach in 15 and 16, but that Jets 2017 season, that was, they had Bryce Petty made three starts, but otherwise it was Josh McCown, kind of like pushing it too. They were pushing the ball down the field, 11 yards per completion, like 7.3 adjusted yards per attempt for, Josh McCown that year too. Not the worst thing in the world. That was also like, Bilal Powell and Matt Forte were in that backfield, but that was also the year Robbie Anderson, 114 targets, 7 touchdowns, over 900 yards. That's kind of like one of his better years with the Jets, and that was when he was again ripping it down the field too. So that will be interesting here because I mean this is not what I thought the Lions would do. I thought they would promote from within. I thought it would be like a Tanner Engstrand type. I thought it might be like a Mark Brunell type or maybe even Hank Fraley. But they go outside somebody in the ecosystem a little bit that has play calling experience. So really curious to see how this kind of ends up.
Yeah, and those who don't know John Morton, he is a longtime Harbaugh, Sean Payton assistant. It kind of bounced between those two, getting rehomed from one to another all the time. But he was recently actually with the Lions a couple of years ago in 2022 as a senior offensive assistant, then went to the Broncos the last couple of years. It's not going to be much of a change, I think, as far as how the offensive makeup of the Lions. I'm sure the terminology is going to be the exact same. And Hank Fraley's still there, which I think is huge. If they lost Fraley, I'd be like, okay, this is getting a little dicey now. But Morton, I've seen it in action. He's willing to chuck it. I know the offensive system he's going to put in. So I think they're going to at least have somewhat of a nice transition going away from Johnson and everything. And it just, as long as Fraley is there, I think that helps shore it up a little bit. They are losing like assistants left and right. I think Antoine Randall went to the Bears as well.
Assistant head coach, wide receiver coach was the title he got there.
So that's a promotion. It's all about titles. Now we're doing the passing game, run game coordinator stuff, which cracks me up because that all that does is just they probably have the same job. It's just a salary bump. It's just a justified salary bump, which I always think is funny. Moving on, you mentioned his name already, Clint Kubiak going to Seattle as the offensive coordinator. This is interesting to me. Kubiak is a Kubiak. He runs a Kubiak Shanahan offense all the way. A lot of outside zone, a lot of lead zone, play action off of that. Got to see the epitomized version of it in the first 2 weeks of the season this year, where it looks great. Kind of tapered off from there. But Kubiak going to Seattle is interesting. Geno loves being in the gun. This offense usually thrives more with some under center in there. Geno can do it, but that's one thing I kind of want to see some merger. This type of offense can shore up some offensive line weakness. Hello, Seattle. That will help. Curious how the receivers are fit, but what'd you think about Kubiak, the younger, now going to Seattle to be offensive coordinator?
Yeah, I think Kubiak acquitted himself pretty well in New Orleans last year. Obviously, it's really tough to judge because they fell apart from a talent perspective. Like when they had players in the first month of the season, especially in the first 2 weeks, obviously the offense was pretty good. And it did feel sort of like Seattle was at a fork in the road with their offense. And this has been on my radar all year with Ryan Grubb and sort of the offensive structure, because I think that Kenneth Walker is an under center back. I think he is. And I think Geno, like you said, is more comfortable out of the gun, like straight drop back concepts, get in the gun and like push the thing all over the field. There was a little bit of like an oil and water effect in this offense all year. And I don't think Grubb quite figured out what to do with that. This to me feels like if we're at the fork in the road analogy, choosing Kubiak is, oh, we're going to fix the freaking run game. Like that's what we're going to do. We're fixing the run game, and we'll figure out the pass game stuff here in a second. And yeah, I mean, and also by the way, you talk about the receivers fitting in here. There's at least rumors that they could trade DK Metcalf. I think the way that I think Tyler Lockett's probably done in Seattle. I think I think it's probably it for him. So this might go from, wow, look at all those wide receivers 2 years ago to it's JSN and, you know, Jake Bobo or whatever. I'm sure they'd make some moves there, obviously, but that room could get reimagined pretty quickly here. If they trade DK, which I actually thought at the end of the year, like, all right, he might be a trade candidate, but the way McDonald talked about it after, I think this was right after firing Ryan Grubb, or maybe right before, basically said, like, we can't just have DK be a decoy. Okay. Like, we need to actually get, it's not enough for him to stretch coverage out and open things up for others. We got to get him the football. So maybe that actually cools that discussion point down. Cause I think Metcalf could be an interesting X in a Shanahan type offense.
Yeah. He's not Shanahan. I think always said the ideal X is Andre Johnson in that offense. Which, I mean, Andre Johnson's do fine laying around. But I think with DK, because of the size, he's such a unique receiver because of his size, but how his play style is. I actually think it's okay because he can get vertical. He can run slants. He's very much a vertical guy. And this offense, which I think will get away from being an 11 personnel, they still might run it, which is also interesting for JSN. But we both like him on the outside. I think he actually really showed up on the outside.
He shredded man coverage in the – he's always been a good man beater in my eyes, but he had like 4 yards per route running against man coverage in the second half of the season.
Second half of the year, right? Yeah, the second half, they started moving him a little bit. And it felt like, okay, cool. I love when I anecdotally say something and you're like, actually.
Actually, this is all I think about, Nate.
Yeah, all I've been charting.
Don't ask me to remember anything. My wife told me like 2 weeks ago, but I remember, you know, who was catching passes from the Seahawks in 2011. So, yeah.
I think we brought up a Lions passing game. I could tell you how much Kenny Galladay got in free agency, but you know, I think this is just an interesting merger that if they hit it, this could be cool. Like if this works, the perfect version of this could really work in the sense that it's two worlds kind of merging with Geno's play style, this play style what Kubiak likes. Cause one of the weaknesses always with a Kubiak or a Shanahan quarterback is, oh, when they drop back, they're dead. Because that's why they try to win on first and second down. Geno is one of the best straight dropback guys. He usually actually doesn't get a lot of help with the play action stuff or screens and everything. The screen game actually got good last year. But I thought that maybe opens up things for passing downs for this offense. And early downs can be more of the Kubiak stuff. And last year, I thought one of the biggest weaknesses of the designs of Grubb and where I kind of was like, okay, you kind of seem more college to me than maybe NFL ready. Was a lot of the stuff didn't merge together. Like the runs didn't match the play action. Not that it has to, but at least you have to show that, all right, play action isn't just weak side zone fake, even if you guys never run weak side zone. It has to be looking like duo. It has to be looking like all the other stuff. Their number one play action protection was off of a run that they never ran, which is over time, NFL defenses who are really good and coaches that are really good are going to go, anytime he opens up to the weak side, it's a play action. Anytime he opens to the strong side, it's a run. Like, that's what they do. So who do you bring in? A Kubiak. That's what they thrive in. Play action protections, play action concepts. So again, if they nail this, this could be cool, but they just have a couple other pieces that they have to figure out. So, but yeah, I like this.
Seattle had some success with Shane Waldron too. Like before Shane Waldron became an absolute punching bag for the entire internet. Geno's first year when they were more of like a 12 personnel team and they were taking shots too, but yeah, they had good drop back concepts there. So maybe it's trying to get back under a little bit of that. I'm also like curious. I mean, talking about Pete Carroll in Las Vegas. I mean, I definitely saw plenty of people on the internet like, oh, Russ going to follow Pete to Las Vegas. Like, well, what about Geno? Like as a trade target or something like that. I do wonder just what their commitment level to Geno is. You know, they did, previous coaching staff obviously gave him the contract, right? Like he's an inherited player for Mike McDonald. And McDonald was, I wouldn't call him flippant about Geno in his postseason comments.
It's a good observation, though.
He was a little like, Yeah, I guess I think he said something to the effect like, yeah, I mean, I see no reason why he wouldn't be our quarterback, which is like a, wouldn't call it a full throated endorsement, yeah, wouldn't call it like a back off or whatever. So I'm just curious, like, how much their decision making here really comes down to Geno Smith, who is a, regardless of where you stand on like the, like Geno as a player, he's an older quarterback.
Yeah, I think we're the same age. Yeah, so which means old. Yeah, exactly. No, I agree with you. I think Pete's staff loved Geno, and obviously Geno loves Pete. They would talk about, I don't know why I'm doing first name basis here, but they would, you see all the clips about like believing in yourself and, you know, always competing and always coming back and always just kind of that. And Geno would talk about how Pete kind of helped that out as well. And I think it was more like they love him, and then McDonald and their staff likes him. And that's a big difference. It's like, there's a difference between he's our guy and he's our guy dot, dot, dot for now. Like that, that's kind of, that's what it felt like to me. It was like, yeah, this is good enough for now, but this is not what's something we want to continue maybe going down. So that's a great, great call that he could be an interesting trade candidate for somebody. And I think it's a very movable contract. It's actually one of the best contracts in the league, just period, getting above average quarterback play for really pennies on the dollar compared to what the other guys are getting paid right now. No, I like this one. Really curious. Seahawks are just a curious team to me. Almost made that playoff prediction correct. Dang it. But anyways, we are going on to the last one here, which is another kind of football 301 subplot. Texans moving on from Bobby Slowick, their offensive coordinator, as well as their offensive line coach, Chris Strasser. Kind of one of them I figured would happen, or both. It was either the offensive line coach or both, and they did. The Texans, it felt like this was needed. This is kind of D'Amico Ryans' first kind of like hard decision, I guess, as far as making maneuvering his coaching staff. Every head coach has to go through this. Again, this is a team that sits nice. They have a quarterback, they have a pass rusher, they have an elite corner. They hopefully can get their left tackle to get his head on, head back straight and looking the right way. They have a elite pass, or at the very least, a tier one pass catcher. Depends on when we think he's pretty basically, yeah, at this point.
I think he's at least tier one. You know, that's my opinion.
Tier one, elite, up there. They have a lot of the pieces you need. Felt like the offensive line sloppiness is really what did them in the last couple of years, and just everyone getting worse under this regime. Bobby Slowick, I actually thought, did a nice job in the playoffs, funnily enough. But I did think that, you know, there, it just push came to shove, and this is kind of what happens. You kind of have to answer in the NFL, and it's not for long, yada, yada, yada. But Chip Kelly, offensive coordinator right now, Ohio State, former head coach of Oregon, former head coach of the 49ers under Trent Baalke, Jaguars, and former head coach of the Eagles, of course, really changed some things. You know, very innovative guy. This Ohio State offense this past year felt, wasn't as like, whoa, crazy blur, but just did a lot of nice things. I like the run game and everything. But Chip Kelly in the NFL, do you have any thoughts on that, Matt? I might have a few as well, but what are some of your thoughts that if he jumps back to the NFL, offensive coordinator for CJ Stroud and the rest of this team?
Yeah, admittedly, I don't know what to think about Chip Kelly as an NFL offensive coordinator, because when he, number one, I, as I say all the time, I don't watch a lot of college football during the season. You know, I'm mostly just once we get to prospects, things like that. So like his years in Philly, and even his year in 16 with the Niners, long time ago, man. You know, so I don't really know what to, I don't really know what to think about him in the NFL. But I will say this about Stroud, and I will not do it, but I feel like I could talk for a long time about the Slowick stuff, because yeah, this to me felt very, very necessary. And you know, one of the things I've thought about this was, and I feel like I feel like unfortunate to say that, because I actually think Slowick probably has a second act in the NFL, but this was painted in some circles as like, what a surprise, or, you know, unfair to Bobby Slowick because like Stroud regressed in year two. It's like, nah, dog, like if you talk about this and you don't bring up the offensive line, I mean, you, number one, go ahead and don't take that opinion seriously. But yeah, I think that this whole offense regressed. And I think a lot of it too comes down to a lot of what I've said about Slowick. And even when he had a good year last year, or in 2023, was that I think they did the Shanahan hits well, and I don't think they did anything else well. So Chip Kelly is obviously like the other side of that, and that's what brings me back to Stroud. Like, and it's interesting now that we're having this is kind of full circle of the whole conversation we're having, where like Sean Payton's system is proliferating around the NFL, or that coaching tree is going around the NFL right now, whereas 4 years ago, it was the Shanahan system everywhere. Like, not every quarterback needs to be a Shanahan system quarterback. Not everybody needs those like guardrails, similar to what we just talked about with Geno Smith a little bit, where I think Stroud does not need to be this under center quarterback where that's a guy I actually want. It's weird to say this because he's coming off a down second season compared to his rookie year, but that's actually a guy I want to see with more responsibilities on his plate. Like, let him set and adjust protections. Let him point out pre-snap matchups, which doesn't happen in the Shanahan offense. I think he even hinted at that at times this year, not that he was throwing Slowick under the bus, but saying essentially like, that's not my responsibility in this system, right? That's mostly on the center in this particular system. And they had issues at the center position all year. So again, it's all connected there. But I'm very interested in the idea to see Stroud more in a bit of a wide open offense, like kind of how he played in Ohio State, where he was in the gun a lot and they're spread the field with a lot of talented receivers. They're going to have to address that position in the offseason, because that was, in addition to the offensive line, I think the pass game went to rot a little bit because of the receiver talent. They never got that trio all clicking at the same time because Dell was not healthy to start the year. And then obviously now I think you have to look at him as gravy next year, which sucks because he's a fun player, but you can't count on him. Diggs is a free agent. It's basically Nico Collins and, you know, like Dave Matthews band, like it's Nico Collins band, right? Like that's what we're dealing with in the Houston Texans wide receiver room right now. So if they're going to do that, they're going to hire Chip Kelly, and I would guess that they're going to spread the formation, but you could tell me more. Yeah, I'm curious your thoughts on Chip and the offense. My guess is what I'd like to see is Stroud not really in this Shanahan system incubator, more in a system that's going to empower him.
Yeah, I think actually Stroud and what the Rams do now, like as far as passing game wise, that is him and Stafford, because they don't want to scramble. They want to work from the pocket. They want to be able, like you said, read the full field and dice you up. Stroud is just such a unique, because he's not a bad athlete. He can move. He just doesn't want to. He just wants to chill in that pocket and light you up. Like, I agree with you. I think a spread shotgun heavy system is better for him than other quarterbacks. Like Trevor, I feel like needs some kind of raising up of the floor to help him kind of keep from his worst habits. Stroud is like, no, keep going. Like, keep pushing, keep going, keep going. I want to see more. I want to see you throw it 40 times. Like, I'm the guy that's always like, no, run it more. The Texans are like the one team I'm like, no, just, it's up to those passes. Just keep it up. Like, even if he got the reins to do this, and I think there's only one really guy that kind of gets to do this right now, what Burrow and the Bengals are right now is like that. That's kind of the crystallized version. But that's such an extreme. And that's a lot of comfort in the quarterback. If it were Chip Kelly, I'm not sure if he has comfort in that. He has comfort in going tempo and comfort in going spread. I think the one thing too, what I think is so interesting is I think because of the Marcus Mariota years and everything Chip was doing in Oregon anyways, is people thought, oh, he needs like a Mike Vick, or he needs someone that's really fast at quarterback. And someone asked him years ago, they go, who would be like the perfect player to play quarterback for you? And he said, Rajon Rondo. And because he was saying quick, smart decision maker, like a point guard. Yeah. The guy dissect. But Stroud.
Stroud.
Okay. So, you know, that's gotten my wheels turning a little bit of like how that would match. Kelly's passing game concepts are kind of, they've been a little flat. They flatlined a little bit. He loves Y cross. Like he kind of, I would say that's maybe one area. So if he were to get hired, I trust the run game. I trust his commitment to the run game. I trust creativity of formations and personnel. He would need a good passing game coordinator. It's almost the opposite of what you would think. But I think if they paired him with that, I'd be really geeked up. And I think, and I know Kelly, this isn't the only place that's interested in him. I think there's another team in AFC South that's interested in him as well as offense coordinator. I think he is an interesting hire. I think the run game would be cool, and he would commit to that, but you don't need the QB run game with him as much as you would think with a Chip Kelly offense. But I think just a lot of that quick decision-making, a variety of drop-back concepts with some cool formation stuff, I like that idea. And especially Chip Kelly as OC. We haven't seen him as an NFL coordinator. We've only seen him as an NFL head coach calling plays. Little differences there. So maybe when you have a defensive head coach on top of you going like, stop being in the shotgun 99% of the time, like, or don't go no huddle, like change it. Sometimes you need that. And I'm sure he's learned a lot being at UCLA, being an assistant now. I'm sure he has learned a decent amount too. So I would love to see Chip Kelly in the NFL. I've always just enjoyed watching his dude as like an acid, you know, or LSD fever dream sometimes. Acid trip, I was going to say. That's kind of how it feels sometimes watching his offenses. I actually thought this last year's Ohio State offense was one of the most, most kind of standard, more traditional type of offensive attack, because he had five stars everywhere. And he's like, I'm not going to overthink this. And I think that makes a lot of sense. So it is something interesting I would be seeing. I actually kind of maybe like it with the Texans personnel, because I think it would help out the run game with some of the creativity stuff, which I think is what they, you know, let them to hit in the ceiling before with the prior staff. So
I was just looking at Chip Kelly's 2016 49ers. Fifth in rush attempts, fourth in rushing yards, and Kaepernick obviously was a part of that team where he was quarterback, run game was involved. Him and Carlos Hyde actually were a nice little duo there.
That's right.
I forgot about that. Yeah, so fifth in rush attempts, fourth in rushing yards, 32nd in passing yards that year. And also the defense, by the way, 32nd in yards and points allowed. So what a season for Chip Kelly, the San Francisco 49ers 2016. But yeah, I mean, that was a legit run game with Carlos Hyde, Colin Kaepernick, and Sean Drawn. Blaine Gabbert also started for that team as well.
That's right. I remember that, actually. I vividly remember that. They can't remember when he was with the Eagles, and he was the one that won the power struggle with Howie Roseman, who were his big free agent signings. It was two running backs. It was Ryan Matthews and who's the guy with the Cowboys?
Who's DeMarco from Vegas, Murray. Actually.
DeMarco Murray. Yes. DeMarco Murray. That was his. Where do you think he wants to put his priority, where he wants to put his priority in? It's the run game. That's how he always has been. So
after trading LeSean McCoy for Kiko Alonso or whatever.
Kiko Alonso.
Yeah, I mean, not a good era of Eagles football.
And,
but then signed
the corner, Byron Maxwell, who got absolutely torched by Julio Jones. And I was there for that game in 2015.
I also think that Jordan Matthews, who was the first round pick of the Eagles when Chip Kelly was the coordinator there, he was sort of one of the original power slot types.
Power slots?
Yeah. I mean, so he was, I remember that. There is a Jordan Matthews season in the reception perception database. I can promise you that. And I remember him like just obliterating zone coverages with this guy that was 6'3", 212. And yeah, he was a near, I mean, they don't have alignment data back then, or at least True Media doesn't. But I mean, he had 872 yards and 997 yards in his first two seasons.
Well, he's got who's he got on the roster now? Xavier Hutchinson. That could be it. They're about the same tier of player.
I do think Hutchinson is a little Lazard-ish.
Yeah.
So maybe that is his role.
I liked Hutchinson more because he got an extended run. I'm not saying he should be a number two or anything, but he deserves a role on your roster. They got a lot of dirty work guys. They got Mechie in there as well. Woods, you know, but actually Chip Kelly loves that because he likes his receivers to block. No block, no rock. That was his whole thing too. So it's an interesting hire. Also, obviously, too, is the no huddle stuff last year. I thought, I was looking up the Commanders this year were first in no huddle rate pretty easily. Like they're in the mid 40s. And then I looked up the historical ranks. I think I can go back like 15 years on True Media. And it was just like 2013 Eagles, 2014 Eagles, 2015 Eagles, 2016 49ers, and then it was like Washington. Like, you know, it was just like who had the highest no huddle rates. So it was all
I remember the clock on every Eagles broadcast in Chip Kelly's first year, because yeah, he was this crazy offensive
signaling.
Yeah.
It'll be good to have him back. I think it'll be fun. Even I think the NFL is more ready for Chip Kelly than it was 10 years ago or 12 years ago. But we're closing it out today. Thank you, Matt, for joining me for that. That was a lot of fun checking in on the coaches. I'll be back on Friday, not Thursday this week, Friday morning, recording with Dane Brugler from The Athletic, draft expert. He was down at the Senior Bowl in Mobile. We're going to catch up on that and catch up on the 2025 NFL draft. That's the new season starting, so strap in for that. I am Nate Tice. You can find me at Nate_Tice on Twitter and Nate Tice on Blue Sky. Matt, where can they find you? What are you working on this week? A lot of receiver versus zone scouting.
I am charting for the new season now for the off season. So yeah, working on. I'm gonna try to do as many free agents as I can, but I am more curious about the draft class. And we might be having some draft stuff coming soon. I need to get familiar with that class here pretty shortly. So I'm working on that. But also, Yahoo Fantasy Forecast, we have a, and I know this is right to your heart, Nate, we have a Lessons Learned podcast coming out with Dalton Del Don later this week. And I've got kind of an article component of that as well.
Love my lessons. I do. But we are wrapping it up today. Like I said, also mailbag, send those mailbag questions. Got a bunch of good ones. Send them to either football301mailbag@yahoosports.com or leave us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts. Jump the line, get the fast pass. It only takes you 40 minutes in the fast pass and 7.5 hours. Subscribe to us, follow us, rate us, watch us on YouTube on the Yahoo Sports YouTube channel. Thank you all for listening. Thank you to Matt for joining me again. Thanks to Stone and Madison behind the scenes. And I'll see you guys next time.